Hello and Happy New Year. Welcome to Weapons and Warfare for Straight Arrow News. I'm your host, Ryan Robertson, and this week, we think we have something special for you. A conversation about wargaming. For viewers of a certain age, no doubt one of the first things that comes to mind when you hear that term is the 1983 classic War Games, starring Matthew Broderick and Ally Sheedy. While the technology of that particular film is rather dated, the idea playing out potential real-world conflicts is something that still happens today. To learn more about that and some of the challenges facing women in the wargaming space today, I sat down with Dr. Yuna Wong, the founder and president of the Women's Wargaming Network. All right, Dr. Yuna Wong, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. You are very active in the wargaming community, as it were. So if you can kind of just give our audience kind of a Reader's Digest version of what you do on a daily basis when it comes to wargaming.
Sure. And I think the first thing I should explain is when most people hear wargaming, they think about hobby wargaming. And what I'm going to be talking about today is professional wargaming. So what does that mean? It's done for the military. It's done for the government. And that's the bulk of the professional wargaming society is very defense oriented.
So when we're talking about wargaming for the DoD or the Pentagon, I mean, we're thinking, hey, if things kick off because of Taiwan, here's what that might look like. Or, you know, if things kick off in the Middle East and the U.S. gets drawn into a wider regional conflict, here's what that might look like. So that way the generals and, you know, the folks at the Pentagon can have an idea of how things might go. Is that kind of accurate?
Yes. So the U.S. Department of Defense, usually called DoD, uses it for a number of purposes and was introduced to wargaming shortly after the U.S. Civil War. So there is quite a long history of it. For example, in term, you asked like what I do. So I was previously at RAND Corporation, where I was briefly co-director for the Center for Gaming. And one of the projects I did while at RAND was the war game called Hegemony. So in 2016, the Pentagon came to RAND and said they wanted a war game to think about the U.S. national defense strategy. They wanted a war game that covered or included live act participants representing China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and terrorists. They wanted a working prototype in a matter of weeks. And this was when the Pentagon was pivoting from the counterinsurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan to great power competition. That's why the focus of the game were state adversaries. And they wanted an environment where they could look at potential candidates for the national defense strategy. And so we did that. We created that game. The strategy writing teams with different proposed strategies came, and they played out their strategy in Hegemony. And the finalist for the national defense strategy came back and was wargamed again. And those games were classified, but then RAND did publish its first commercially available board game, Hegemony. And it's available on the RAND website. Those were inputs to the 2018 U.S. National Defense Strategy. So that was an example of a strategy game. And through the Women's Wargaming Network, we are working to offer RAND updates to that. So I no longer work at RAND Corporation, but it's sure. To offer updates. And so that is one piece of my wargaming career.
When we're talking about, you know, finding the National Defense Strategy, is it, you know, the powers that be, the players, I guess, in the war game, they all think of, you know, this is how I would do it. And then let's go put it into action. And then whichever strategy turns out to be, you know, the best becomes the national defense strategy. Is that how I understood that?
Well, there were all sort of inputs. So there are many inputs into the final national defense strategy. You can't always tell sometimes the direct line between a war game and insights people might gain from the war game and a decision. Although people who were part of the sponsor in the Pentagon have said it was very helpful for the eventual strategy. Sometimes I hesitate to it's not so much a strict contest. The idea of the games was that people would try to play out their strategy. And sometimes you would have a strategy that sounded great on paper, and then you try to implement it. And we thought our job was to make it difficult for the United States to implement their strategy. So, okay, you're going to focus on your strategy says you're going to do this. So it means you're going to focus on this. Well, what if like these other things that you have said are not your priority happen? Like, how much pain are you willing to take? What are the potential consequences that you didn't think of when you're trying to implement your strategy, especially the way your allies and partners might perceive it? So Thomas Schelling, who was an early pioneer in nuclear crisis games at RAND Corporation, and he won the Nobel Prize in economics for game theory. And I had the great privilege of taking his class in game theory before he some years before he won the Nobel Prize. But when he was talking about war games, he was saying one of the things no one, no matter how intelligent, can do is to make a list of the things that would not have occurred to them. So we thought it was really success if someone tried a strategy, writing team tried to play out their strategy in a simulated world with regional experts, and something came up that no one had thought of before.
You mentioned it just a little bit ago, the Women's Wargaming Network, which you are, founding, one of the founding members, the leader of the network. It's a nonprofit group that's designed to get young girls into this field because, you know, misogyny has reigned supreme up until now. Is that accurate?
I think it's very fair to say it's been a very male-dominated field. And then I do have to add, not just young girls, but also eyes bigger than our stomach, but we hope to support women throughout their careers. So I also feel a lot for maybe women who are defense professionals and very experienced defense professionals, but also to help them gain an understanding of wargaming, because it's such a common tool in the defense industry that even them having a better idea of its uses, its limitations, the way people actually literally game war games. So I've done briefings to the Pentagon before entitled How to Lie with War Games. So the ways people try to use war games. So I always say there's that famous quote from Clausewitz that says war is an extension of politics. And then you could also say like war games can be an extension of organizational politics within the Pentagon.
That's great to, I didn't really think about that of it's not just about playing it, but there's women on the Hill who need to know what it is so that they can just, do their jobs it's like insider baseball, right? It's if you know what they're talking about, then you can be a part of the conversation. But if you don't know what the rules of the game are, then you don't know what people are talking about. What are some of the challenges right now to entry for both young women and women of all ages?
Sure, absolutely. That's a great question. So until about a decade ago, wargaming had declined quite a bit. So if you look at the historic record from, say, the 1940s through the 60s and late 60s, it looked like the U.S. defense community had a much more robust wargaming just community, that people were just more familiar with it. They were more sophisticated in their use of it. They used it more extensively. And so it had really atrophied by the time that then Deputy Secretary of Defense, Bob Work in about 2014, 2015 tried to reinvigorate wargaming. And I also did get to be on a panel recently where he was moderating. And so he was openly wondering if he had had an effect. And we're saying yes. So the community has revived a bit since then, compared to the historic record, not so much. So one of the barriers was there was just not a lot of resources being put into wargaming. There were, of course, places like Naval War College and others that have sort of continued. Right? And Naval War College has a place in history during the interwar years between World War I and World War II. So the Naval War College war games are credited with doing things like helping the U.S. Navy understand and develop carrier battle tactics in absence of a real war. And you have some historians who say Germany, right? So the Prussians invented modern wargaming. So Germany is also is said by some historians to have used a number of tools to including wargaming, like observations, exercises, wargames, to help in the interwar years develop things like Blitzkrieg and U-boat doctrine at a time when they were not technically allowed to have either tanks or submarines because of the Treaty of Versailles. Another barrier for women especially has been, I think, in the past generation. So defense wargamers have usually come from people who had spent their adolescence with complex hobby games, hex and counter hobby games, right? Those board games, which not a lot of women just spend their time that way. And also oftentimes people come in through military planning and combat arms were closed to women and you didn't have a lot of women who are military planners who would also understand sort of operations. And also sometimes you would get them from the political science community into especially international relations. But until relatively recently, that was also a very male dominated. So now of those three communities, you see more women in international relations. And sometimes the way they may enter wargaming is as experts or as users or as people who receive briefings about the games. I think you do see very, so that generation who, so about 10 years ago, they were the current generation, but they came at their wargaming expertise because they'd played hobby games. So whenever someone was like, oh, we need to build a wargame, the people who would volunteer would have that hobby gaming experience. I think now I would say Gen X, my generation is probably the more senior wargamers and our concept of games was Nintendo. So you do see over time that it's just because of the way people have different sort of generational experiences with gaming that some of the usage of the technology does change. One of the limiting factors for the Department of Defense is the classification and classified networks. So most games are classified and it can be very difficult to run software on classified systems. So people sometimes look at the commercial hobby gaming industry, like the computer online gaming industry and goes, oh, DoD is really behind. But you have to remember that that community can have millions of users. And the games don't have to be realistic, just entertaining. Whereas for professional games, it may have to be classified. You'll have to run it once sometimes, and that's it. So sometimes just from a cost perspective, it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend a lot on developing software for a game you might run for the sponsor once.
That makes sense. And as far as the classification, I mean, it makes sense that it's classified because if you're running a game and you find out, oh, our new B-21 Raiders can't actually do XYZ mission that they thought we could. And if that gets out to our adversaries, then it just, shines a hole in a gap in our own coverage of defense, right?
Yes, absolutely. And in many cases, the scenarios or other details that are inputs into the war game are classified. Sure. And sometimes people, if they want to talk about different capabilities, the capabilities themselves are also classified, as well as some of the findings may be, right? Not things you want to get out.
Yeah, I mean, the inputs, that makes sense, because it could be coming from human intelligence, signal intelligence, that you don't want your adversary to know that you have a source that they don't know about, right? Let's talk about the Women's Wargaming Network a little bit more. You know, I have two daughters, a teenager and a toddler. If they came to me tomorrow and said, "Hey, Dad, I want to get involved in wargaming," what do I do as a dad to steer them in that direction? I mean, what resources are available to me?
Sure. So I would recommend the Connections Wargaming Conference, which is an annual conference. And that's where the Women's Wargaming Network actually started. And that's also where I started as a wargamer. So I think it was about 2011. Someone made me look this up once for an article. It's like I walk into the Connections Wargaming Network. I walk into the Connections Wargaming Conference, and I'm like, there are a bunch of middle-aged white men, excuse me, hunched over with dice, rolling dice. I didn't know dice came in more than six sides. It's like, what are they doing? Right. And then I suddenly had this sense that I had come home and these were my people. Right? It's like, I'm home. It's like, what is this? Right. What are they doing? Right. If these are my people, what is it that they do? And it was really through that network that it's a community of practice. So if you look at the literatures on community of practice, the successful ones, you're able to develop relationships where you can call people up and go, "Hey, how did you do this cyber war game, for example?" And so that is a community that sort of made it through the lean years where wargaming was not very popular. And continues to try to build resources. So in 2020, they had their first conference online because of COVID. Mm. And a couple of the longtime organizers called me because they wanted to know my experience. I had just attended another annual professional conference. And they were like, "Well, were there any lessons for Connections from that?" And I said, "Well, yeah, it's really tough because people were just online. They had their cameras off. They had their audio off. So there are people who might come and you might never see them again. I think we're going to have to make a little extra effort to connect people socially." And so I was like, "What about like a Women's Wargaming Network?" They're like, "Yes." So like, right, if you come up with an idea, sometimes you are the one who has to implement it.
It's a blessing and a curse, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. But for some people, find that the focus on the war part of wargaming is not necessarily something they want to do. But there are peace games. Even people, HEB, right? It's the Texas grocery chain.
Sure.
Used games during the pandemic to figure out how COVID could affect their supply chain. So it does not have to be sort of war focused.
And that's a good point. I mean, it's about critical thinking and, you know, problem solving. And here's your inputs. What happens next, kind of thing, right? Yeah. So I guess the last question I had is, we hear so often that, you know, when there's a traditionally male-dominated field or industry, you know, and there's pushback to opening it up to women. Traditionally, it's like, well, what can they bring in, right? The pushback to women in combat is, well, women aren't strong enough. They can't meet the qualifications. It's gonna, you know, diminish battlefield readiness. So when you over the course of your wargaming career, I'm sure that you have heard all the detractors out there. What's your answer to them? Why is it important for women to be a part of this space?
So I think the community has been, once we started this conversation, has been pretty welcoming, actually. So I've noticed once we start talking about it, people do make an effort. So some of it is, again, traditionally, women have not been as trained in military planning or in just mechanics of board games. But now, like, international relations, especially, is a way that they enter now because they're more women just in the community. I think, though, like, there are some things we've had to make explicit, like, don't do this, right? When women come, like, don't make her the note taker. I've seen where I sent a woman who is a racial minority and a PhD interested in wargaming, and they made her the note taker. And I'm like, oh, no, they did not do that, right? Like, they did, right?
Yeah.
So I had to work behind the scenes to eventually give her more opportunities. But also, I think there's also a tendency from sometimes women to believe they need to know a lot before they can offer something. Whereas it can be the case that men, especially younger men, are very interested. So they volunteer and are more confident that they can contribute. So sometimes if you just those dynamics alone, if you were to say, I want people who are really interested, the women might not feel that they know enough. So that's where I coach women when I mentor them and they're like, oh, like, but I don't know this, this, and this, and this. And I'm like, let me tell you, just like one time when I was at RAND, the media office contacted me because some hobby gamer had contacted RAND and offered his insights to RAND's war games. And I'm like, that's great. That does not make you an expert on any of the topics the sponsor is interested in. But that was an amazing level of confidence. And I've said at other wargaming conferences before, and I'm like, for the love of God, when a woman shows up, I'm like, do not mansplain. So at that conference, it was a British wargaming conference. I came, a person didn't know I was one of the speakers. He immediately starts to explain to me that during World War II, that the Soviet Union and Germany had a non-aggression pact, right? Mm. So this is after I had designed and co-led the 2019 NATO military strategy game, which we ran at NATO headquarters. And this man was assuming.
Walks up to you like, oh, let me tell you about World War II.
right. Like, and then, so after I go up and go, for the love of God, don't mansplain. It was an older British gentleman. And then he came to me afterwards, goes, I wasn't doing that, was I? And I'm like, I have 5 degrees. I might know that, right? Like that they had a non-aggression pact. I didn't mention, like, 2 of my degrees are in political science. I didn't mention, I'd done the NATO military strategy game and I'd done hegemony for the Pentagon, right? It's just, if there's a mansplaining chart, flow chart online that's around. And if it looks, sometimes is, would a man of equivalent experience and education know this, right? And if the answer is yes, then you are mansplaining. Am I mansplaining chart? And I think one thing even I've pushed back, so Naval War College, right, the big center for wargaming, the ancestral home, if you will, of modern U.S. wargaming. They did have slides out that they were talking about how to put on a war game. And in one slide, it was like logistics, like war game logistics. And they had, or like they called it like wedding planning. And it was a picture of like a bride. So I had to explain that a lot of people in the wargaming, men in the wargaming community, do poo-poo the wedding planning piece of it. Like who comes, who sits where, what the organizational piece or what they call logistics. And like, you don't want to, that actually is sexist because you are mocking women's work that women do for other women as like inferior to sort of the war game design that men might do. And I've even been interviewed by researchers studying the war gaming community. And one of them offered this quote. She said, war game designer as God. And I'm like, yes, that's really what they think.
And so just having the, other opinions is if you're designing a war game, you want as many opinions as possible. And obviously, as a man, I'm immediately excluding half the world population if I don't include, women in my input, right?
And if I could jump on that, recently, this is a comment I made at the Army Mad Scientist Game On event that was hosted at Georgetown University. I told them that this was the most male audience I'd ever addressed in my life. And I have seen some male dominated fields. I've been in male dominated fields since adolescence because I was in a science and technology magnet school. So it says something that it was the most male dominated field I'd ever seen. And I'm like, remember that women are more than half of college graduates, right? And you can pay them less. So remember that.
But hopefully we don't have to pay the, or they don't get paid less, right? Yeah, hopefully we can change that. Dr. Wong, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. Is there a question I didn't ask that you feel like needs to be answered, or anything else that you'd like to say before we let you go?
I think for people asking what can they do, right? Because that's another answer, a question I get that I appreciate. And then I also, so another, one thing you can do is you don't have to look like someone to mentor them and to include them, right? And remember, and I did say at one conference, it makes me a little sad because when people get excited about women in wargaming, they mean white women, right? They're excited to include white women. They don't invite the other woman. So again, if like talent is randomly distributed, but opportunities are not, we don't take advantage of things that some people have to offer. And then I also spend a lot of time trying to build up the basic skill sets. And so this year at Connections, which is a free conference, by the way, so anyone can come, I'm going to try to suggest to the community sort of, it modeled after the Facilitation Professional Societies, where it's a certification. Like, here's a skill, here's a training, here's a list of skills and trainings. And I feel like that can also help reduce bias. So right. Another way, what you can do is rather than say who's interested, say, well, I'm looking for someone who has experience in this, this, and this. So that way you can see, are the people that you think could contribute, do they have experiences X, Y, and Z? So you might encourage them to get experiences X, Y, and Z. And then sort of evaluating a person against experiences X, Y, and Z, you may be like, oh, there are these women who do have experiences X, Y, and Z, who may maybe not be the most obvious candidates in some people's minds, but who, if you sort of just look at skills and experiences, may help you select for people who may be overlooked, even though they have the skills and experiences that you need. And a third thing that people can do is just make more women visible, right? Like even representation in media, women might think that it's not something that they'd be interested in until they see someone like them. And then they can, then they're like, oh, wait, I could do that, right? So that's pretty important. So thanks very much for that question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. Wong, thank you so much. All the luck to you and the Women's Wargaming Network. I hope that it takes off like wildfire and we get more women involved in the industry.
Thank you so much.